Can you state that in the form of a question? Oh, you were. Oh, that's right, yes. Okay, Harish, please, Pajal.
They do?
Okay.
But what?
They never see the Krishna in his original form. Why only Vaishnavas can see Krishna? And why Krishna revealed himself to only those who are living in India, not in other parts of the universe or the planet?
Sri Chaitanya Manavasam Sapitanam Bhutla Swami Bhutanam Bhutanam Bhutanam.
Is everybody able to hear the questions?
Yes.
No.
Okay.
So,
you repeat. Speak up.
Во-первых, почему, несмотря на то, что разумные люди разных религиозных традиций сходятся на том, что Господь един, почему все-таки не могут найти представителей разных религий общего языка? Почему все считают все-таки, что моя религия лучше? Это был такой первый вопрос. Второй был дальше, что Кришна является... Но Кришна может видеть только Вайшнава в своей изначальной форме, Святые других религиозных течений могут общаться с Богом каким-то образом, то они Кришну встретят и чего-то они не видят. Почему так происходит?
So, first of all, let's consider why, although the religions themselves may consider God as one, the followers of religion, they sometimes, or oftentimes, do not. So first of all, let's go back to Satya Yuga. In Satya Yuga, there's only one religion. And practically speaking, everybody during Satya Yuga, they go back home, back to Godhead. The process of religion is very difficult, but they have very long lives, and they have a very great ability to be able to practice that process. During Satya Yuga, there's no conflict about religion. Why is that, we might ask? Because in Satya Yuga, everything, every person is situated in Sattva Guna. The characteristic of Sattva Guna is that one can understand things as they are. Free from the influence of passion and ignorance, there is no conflict. Then later, as time moves on, we go into Treta Dwarpa Yuga, passion, Rajagun, and then Tamagun is introduced. So, of course, your question pertains to Kali Yuga, to recent times. And, of course, the symptom of the modern age is that everyone is practically immersed completely in passion and ignorance with very little sattva guna. By the influence of Rajagun, one sees a different living entity in every different body. So they see a black person is different from a white person, men from, as different from women. Foreigners are different from natives.
И иностранцы отличаются с подражанием от
наших. Poor people are different from white rich people.
Богатые люди отличаются от бедных людей.
So this consciousness of seeing different persons in different bodies is also extended to religion. So they, persons influenced by Rajaguna and Tamaguna, they don't have the ability to see things, see the equality or the similarities in different things. So therefore they see all religions as different. Yeah, they, people influenced by in fact, by their way of understanding, they cannot be the same. So, which one is best? Mine. Because I'm best. Me and all of my people, we are going to heaven. Everyone else is going to hell. This is a result of Tamaguna and Rajaguna and Tamaguna. This Tamaguna makes one envious of others. And therefore such people, they like to also have religious systems that are also full of envy. That means that my God is partial to me, and he is, and if you are my enemy, my God will kill you. So how many of you have read the Bible, the Old Testament? Anybody? Okay. In the Old Testament of the Bible, it talks about this God Jehovah. There's actually some question as to whether Jehovah is actually God as we know him. Because in the Bible, Jehovah shows himself as being envious of others. Jehovah has his favored people, the Jews. And he promises the Jews that he will kill their enemies. So this is the Bhagavatam condemns such religious systems, such envious religious systems. Bhagavatam asks, what possible good can come from engaging in a religion which is envious? Actually, very little good can come from that. But because the people are envious, therefore they want to have a religion which is also envious. In fact, because of the confusion of people in Kali Yuga due to Rajaguna and Tamaguna, there must be many different religion systems.
И на самом деле, из-за того, что люди, они не обладают пониманием друг друга, благодаря влиянию на них, талантливым разумом, то должно быть много разных стилей.
And people will take a particular religion, one that suits their own consciousness. These religions do not actually have any understanding of the absolute truth. But they're based on belief. They're based on belief. So according to a person's consciousness, he will be attracted to a particular way of, he will have a particular faith. This is explained in the 17th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Text number 3. Satvam rupa sarvasya sada bhavati bharata sadhamayo yam purusho yo yach sadha saiva saha. According to one's existence under the various modes of nature, one evolves a particular kind of faith. The living being is said to be of a particular faith according to the modes that he has acquired.
Находясь под преобладающим влиянием одной из материальных дум, живое существо приобретает соответствующий тип веры. Говорится, что характер его веры определяется тем, какие гумы на него влияют.
Комментарий.
Каждый человек, кем он ни был, во что-то верит. Но в зависимости от природы человека, его вера может относиться к его благости, страсти и невежеству. И вера, в свою очередь, определяет путь его общения. На самом деле, каждое живое существо, как было сказано в 15 главе, по природе своей является крошечной частицей духовного воздуха. Поэтому изначально все это находится вне влияния ума материальных миров. Однако, это живое существо забывает о своих взаимоотношениях с верховной личностью Бога и, приходя с предоставлением с материальной природой, начиная от подходного существования, оно само определяет свое положение в этом мире, отдавая предпочтение тому или иному сочетанию материальных ум. В результате в нем формируется искусственное материальное мир, начинается его искусственная материальная жизнь. При этом живое существо руководствуется каким-то представлением, и у него возникает некая концепция жизни, ведь изначально она является неркумной, то есть трансцендентной. Поэтому ему необходимо очиститься от приведенной материальной сферы, только в этом случае она сможет восстановить взаимоотношения со Всевышним. Это единственная дорога назад, по которой можно идти, не ведая страха, сознания Кришны. Тот, кто развил себе сознание Кришны, обязательно достигнет совершенства. Если же человек отказывается вступить на этот путь самосознания, он так останется во власти трех гун материальных природ. Очень важно в данном стихе говорить слово «шарпа» – «вера». Шарпа, «вера» всегда возникает из гуны благости. Человек может верить в какого-то полубога, придуманного Бога или в собственный гуну. Однако в любом случае сильная вера должна приводить его к деятельности в материальной гуны благости. Но в материальном условии жизни ни одно действие не может быть абсолютно чистым. В нем всегда есть какие-то кризисы. В материальном мире нет благости чистого мира. Чистая благость трансцендентна, и только на этом уровне душа способна постичь истинную природу духовной личности Бога. Пока наша вера не находится полностью в чистой благости, она всегда будет осквернена влиянием других материальных гун. Оскверняющее влияние гун природы затрагивает сердце живого существа. Поэтому вера живого существа зависит от того, под влиянием какой из гун находится его сердце. Тот, чье сердце находится в гуне благости, обладает верой гуне благости. Если сердце человека осквернено влиянием гуне страсти, его вера приобретает качество страсти. А тот, чье сердце заполнено тьма и невежество, обладает верой осквернённой невежеством. Таким образом, в материальном мире возникают различные виды веры, которые лежат в основе различных религиозных систем. Истинная религия и вера находятся в гуне чистой благости. Но поскольку сердца людей поражены материальной скверной, они исповедуют различные религии. Так различные типы веры приводят к возникновению разных правопознаний.
We're going to continue with the next verse also. Text number 4.
Продолжим.
Yajante Satika Devan Yakshashmi Rajasaha Pritambhuta Gumams Chanye Yajante Tamasajana. Men in the mode of goodness worship the demigods, those in the mode of passion worship the demons, and those in the mode of ignorance worship ghosts and spirits.
Писание сказано, что единственным объектом поклонения является духовное вещество. Но те, кто не знает написание шастр или не следует им, избирают другие объекты поклонения, в зависимости от того, под влиянием каких мощь они находятся. Великие благости, как правило, почитаются в оборот. Брак мужчин и других, таких как Индра, Чандра или Бог Солнца. Люди с любыми благости поклоняются какому-либо другому и следуют определенным целям. Подобно этому, те, кто находится влиянием луны страсти, поклоняется демонам. Я помню, как во время Второй мировой войны один человек в Калькутте поклонялся Гитлеру, потому что он жил на войне огромное состояние, занимаясь махинациями на черном рынке. Люди в луна страсти и невежества обычно боготворят какую-либо великую личность. Они считают, что любому человеку можно поклоняться как Богу, достичь тем же результатам. В этом стихе ясно сказано, что люди в луны страсти сами создали свои работы, поклоняются им. А те, кто находится в глубине невежества, лицом поклоняются в другом сорше, умершим. Некоторые из них проводят свои обряды в каких-нибудь могилах. Всевозможные обряды, связанные с сердцем, также относятся к глубине невежества. В глухих индийских деревнях можно найти людей, которые поклоняются привидениям. Мы видели, как люди, невежественные люди, иногда отправляются в лес, чтобы поклониться и принести жертву какому-то дереву, по которой ритм ваш, но живет дух. Все эти люди на самом деле поклоняются не Богу. Поклоняться Богу могут только те, кто находится на духовном уровне, уровне чистой благости, вне влияния материальных сил. Шримад Бхагаватам 4.3.23 сказано: «Саттвам Бхишхутам Бхагаватам Шаттвитам». На уровне чистой благости человек поклоняется Господу. Иными словами, только тот, кто полностью очистился и выйдет из подозрения материальных сил, достиг трансцендентного уровня, может поклоняться Верховному Чистому Богу. Интерсоналисты, которые принято считают Богом за другими бабушками, поклоняются таким богам. Они поклоняются безличной форме, личным проявлением мира, которую называют философской концепцией Вишну. Вишна – это воплощение Верховного Чистого Бога. Но, так как интерсоналисты на самом деле не верят в Верховному Чистому Богу, они считают Вишну одним из аспектов безличного Брахма. А Господа Брахма – проявлением безличного Брахма над материальной и страстью. Поэтому иногда персоналисты поклоняются таким богам. Но поскольку они думают, что высшим аспектом абсолютной истины является безличным брахмом, в конечном счете они отказываются от поклонения внутренним богам. В заключение остается сказать, что очиститься от оскверняющего влияния глубины материальной природы можно только благодаря общению с людьми, находящимися в неисследованных предвестиях.
So Prabhupada is explaining here that according to one's consciousness, influenced by the gunas, one worships in a particular way. Not being in the mode of goodness, persons cannot understand who is actually God, and therefore how to worship God.
И находясь в уме благости, человек не может понять, кто на самом деле является Господом и каким образом ему поклоняться.
Instead, what they do is to manufacture their own idea of God.
Вместо этого, что они делают, они проявляют свои собственные понимания Бога.
And again, I'll give you the example of the Bible.
И опять я вам дам пример Библии.
The Jews of the first century, there were two different divisions of Jews during the first century. Not our millennium, first century BC, zero BC, zero AD, first century.
То есть было две группы евреев.
There was Jesus and his followers. They were known as the Ebionites. Ebionites. And then there was the Pharisees, or the Jews who were more or less compromised by cooperation with the Romans. The Jews who were with Jesus actually had the opinion that their religion, that their scripture, the Torah, had been falsified as early as 1,000, as much as 1,000 years earlier. It was their opinion that the Supreme God must be a very, very kind and loving person. And they were convinced that as much as 1,000 years earlier, that the original God was taken out of their scripture, the Torah, and this false God, Jehovah, was put there. So, Jesus' role at that time was to reestablish the proper principles of religion. Which is why he was not liked by the Pharisees. The point is that all over the world, practically speaking, we understand that in previous times everyone was followers of Vedic culture. And there's evidence for this everywhere. One of my god brothers, Srinandanandana, wrote a book, The Proof of Vedic Culture's Global Existence. And in that book he gives evidence from every continent, every place, about of the proof of Vedic culture. One of those proofs is that people everywhere were engaged in worship of the demigods. Of course, they called them by different names. For example, I went to visit one Brahmin from one Vedic Brahmin in Kiev. Do you remember the name of their group? They have, we had a very interesting conversation with them. They were showing us different pictures of the gods that they worshipped. And there were gods that corresponded to Indra, to Shiva, to Durga, I suppose. And they would perform fire sacrifices also. They would make a big, great, very big fire. Using logs, huh?
using logs, not sticks. And they would pour buckets of ghee into this fire. Actually, they're still doing these sacrifices like this. It's they themselves admit to be followers of Bhagavad Gita, mostly. And they chant what they call Vedic mantras. So that's one example. Still current here in Ukraine. But all over the world there's examples of that. Of course, others throughout the world, we know that there are different followers of different religions everywhere throughout the world. There's something like 30 major sects of Islam. And hundreds, of course, of different branches of Christianity. In these people, what they do is they manufacture their own idea of religion. According to the gunas. So, now, why can't they understand each other? Again, because of the moons. So, very difficult to try to convince such a person about the about any religious truth. Prabhupada, for example, he wouldn't talk to them on the basis of any religious belief, but he would speak in terms of logic. For example, he wouldn't talk about God, but he would talk about an absolute truth. And that absolute truth is that from which everything is coming. So he would speak in terms of logic like this. It's actually very difficult to try to convince such people about the truth of religion, particularly if they are not submissive. And in fact, this is even a little dangerous for our own spiritual life. This is one of the offenses to chanting the holy names. Preaching the glories of the Lord to the faithless. So, if such persons come to challenge or to argue, it's very unlikely that you will have some success in trying to convince them. The best approach is to ask them questions. You say something like, I can explain to you what we believe. What would you like to know? In this way, you get them to ask questions, and they are opening themselves up to receive an answer. If they are not willing to do that, then it's best not to talk to them. You just excuse yourself, you say, have a nice day, Hare Krishna. In the second verse, it says that those in the mode of passion, they worship the demons. What does that mean? In this sense, it means they worship powerful people. And Prabhupada gives the example of such a person who is worshipping Hitler. But let's understand a little more carefully what this means. If we say worship the demons, does that mean they offer arti? No. Does it mean that they create an altar in their house and they put an image of such a person there? No, they may do that. But more likely what this means is to worship a powerful person means that you pay homage to them.
Homage?
You give them deference. You defer to them. Let me give an example.
Huh? Like respect?
Yeah. Well, more than respect. Let me give you an example. Here in Donetsk, there's many powerful people, right? I recently read that the biggest mafioso in the world is a resident of your city. What's his name? This big mafioso?
Done.
Yeah. So he has this reputation of being the biggest mafia personality in the world. So what does it mean that people will worship him? Whatever you want, sir. Yes, sir. Right away, sir. They serve him. Why? Because they can get something from him. People who want something from a powerful person, they will do whatever that person asks of them. In this way they create some deal. But it's the same of all powerful people everywhere. It's the same for all powerful people everywhere. Because this powerful person, powerful means that they have control, they have influence, they can help you or they can hurt you. And generally what goes on is people who are interested in power, they worship such powerful people. Because when you come close to such people, you can also become powerful. And this is what materialistic people are interested in. The devotee of Krishna, on the other hand, he's not interested in the power, but he's worshipping the powerful. The devotee of Krishna, on the other hand, he's not interested in the power, but he's interested in the powerful, the person who is powerful. The devotee of Krishna. Okay, the devotee of Krishna is not interested in power. He's interested in serving the source of the power. That powerful person is Bhagavan.
Могущественная личность, это и есть Бхагаван.
He doesn't worship Krishna for the purpose of getting something in return. He's simply interested in pleasing Krishna. Those in the modes of passion and ignorance, however, they want something in return for their worship. They are more interested in the power than the powerful. And therefore their interest in worship of the power, these powerful persons, is simply so that they can get power. And there's many examples throughout history where such people, when they have the opportunity to kill the source, to kill that person who has helped them, they do so. So that they can get the power. This is called political intrigue. So, and those who worship those in Tamagun, they worship the ghosts and spirits. This means the black arts. Black magic, black art. And there's, they do that in this country? They worship? Yeah? You have some witches like this? Huh? Yeah?
In some villages.
In some villages?
Yeah.
Also in India, there are? Not so much in America, but in the Caribbean islands, there's a lot of this going on. And in South America. Because these, again, they want something from this worship. These ghosts and spirits are powerful in a particular sense that they can create some reaction in this material, on the material plane. And so they, again, they worship in order to get something. So it's not possible that these people who are influenced by the Moja Raja and Tamagun, that they can even understand God, what to speak of agreeing on who that God is. And as we read here, that even those in the mode of goodness, still they have material desires, but they worship properly the demigods who can grant those desires. So it's only those who are in Sudasattva or transcendental platform who are actually interested in worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now, most people that you might meet on the street doing Sankirtan or something like that, they don't understand these things at all. They may have, in fact, some idea that they are worshipping the Supreme God. And if they are not envious, then it's possible that they are willing to listen and to hear an explanation about philosophical understanding of the position of God. But before you try to preach to such people, you must see whether they are non-envious and whether they are asking submissive, inquiring in a submissive way.
они не завистливают, так же, что они смиренно задают вопрос.
Otherwise, do not preach to them. So, is that complete? Or is there more?
Yes.
Complete? Does anybody have any question on those points?
Why should one not to preach to them? Does it be worse to them?
It's an offense to the holy name to preach the glories of the Lord to the faithless. You damage your bhakti creeper. If they are submissive and willing to hear, okay. Now, if you're an expert, you can tell the person who is trying to understand.
Если вы искусно в понимании, то вы можете увидеть, какой человек действительно хочет что-то понять.
Some people want to understand, but they ask questions from their previous understanding.
Некоторые люди хотят что-то понять, но вопросы они задают, основываясь на своем предыдущем понимании.
But you have to be expert enough to understand, are they challenging that they are simply trying to make you right and make themselves right and you wrong? Or are they actually trying to understand the truth?
И у вас должно быть это различение. Вы должны увидеть, бросают ли они вам вызов для того, чтобы показать, что они правы или нет, или они просто задают вопрос, основываясь на своем понимании.
But you have to be expert enough to be able to understand the difference.
Нужно быть достаточно квалифицированным, чтобы увидеть разницу.
This means that you must also be expert enough preacher to be able to give them proper arguments to convince them.
И также вы должны быть достаточно квалифицированным проповедником, чтобы представить им такие аргументы, которые их убедят.
Прабу?
Защита, самозащита, это служение Кришне.
Защита и самозащита? Defense and self-defense. Is it the service to Krishna?
Defense and...
Self-defense.
Self-defense. What are we talking about?
О чем мы говорим?
Ну, она может быть из любых проявлений, которые как бы видят то, что чиновники глумятся над самим человеком, над другими людьми, ставят его, говорят, что он не прав и так далее, в таком плане. Потом проявление того, что несправедливое отношение как бы власти принадлежащих нации. Причем правильно несправедливость этих всех вопросов.
For example, the attitude of authorities towards common people is not just. So if we are fighting for justice, is it service to Krishna or not?
The question is how to fight. Lord Chaitanya gave his own example.
He says, of course, by knowledge.
Yeah, Lord Chaitanya gave the example. The Chankasi gave an order to stop the Sankirtan, so Lord Chaitanya organized a rebellious movement of Harinam. And so he gave, by his own example, he showed how one can challenge the secular authorities. We also had such a passive demonstration. We also had such demonstrations in America in the late 1980s to free the, actually in the middle 1980s, to free the Soviet Hare Krishnas.
В Америке в середине 80-х годов также были демонстрации людей в поддержку заключенных мучеников Советского Союза.
Our devotees in America went to the Soviet embassy and they would hold signs of devotees who were in prison. And they would chant Hare Krishna there and make a picket of the embassy all day long.
They hold signs?
They would have a sign with pictures of these devotees who were in prison. I also heard of such stories from the devotees in Russia, how in the late 1980s, when the movement was getting powerful, they would have also some very large Harinams in Moscow. And I heard the story how these police, they were very bewildered by this Harinam. The devotees were come down the street, and the police, they didn't know what to do. They called their supervisors and they were very actually afraid of the devotees. And of course, recently we had such demonstrations at different embassies around the world for the devotees in Kazakhstan. So in that sense, we are we follow the principle of self-defense. As far as protecting our own body, that is a different thing. For that, we have an example of from the Srimad Bhagavatam in the first canto. Kali was harming the bull. And Parikshit came and he asked him, he asked the bull, what's happening? What's going on here? But Dharma would not say anything. On the basis that one who accuses the attacker is as guilty as the person who is attacking. The Bhagavatam there explains that in the voice of Dharma the bull, who is actually guilty? Who is the guilty party? If I were not guilty of something, this attacker could not be attacking me. The fact that I'm being attacked means that I'm guilty. So Dharma refused to identify the person who is harming him. So this is a lesson for us also. That we, as devotees, we surrender ourselves to Krishna. We are under his personal protection. If Krishna wants to save us, nobody can kill us. If Krishna wants to kill us, nobody can save us. Now, devotees may cry out to Krishna for his help.
And
there's a lot of stories about that. Many devotees cry out when they're in a dangerous situation, they cry out to Lord Nrisimhadeva for his protection. And I've heard a number of stories which are, you could say, like miracles, which happen when devotees cry out for Nrisimhadeva's protection. Demonstrating that in fact the Lord Nrisimhadeva is protecting his devotees. So self-defense means different things in different situations. Does this answer your question?
In any case, self-defense, is it service or not?
And what?
Self-defense, is it a service or not?
Say the whole thing. I didn't hear the first part.
He said, in any case, is self-defense service or not?
Oh, service.
Service.
Okay, let's ask a question. Somebody comes and attacks you. And you start to defend yourself. What is your consciousness at that point in time? Is it service or not? It depends on your consciousness. Prabhupada gives the example in different ways. He says the activity itself is not the point, but it's the consciousness behind the activity. Every day so many people are sweeping the floor, but some are sweeping the floor of Krishna's temple. And those who are sweeping the floor as with the consciousness of doing devotional service to please Krishna, that is devotional service. So the important point then is, what is the consciousness with which the activity is being done? If we're talking about a physical fight in which people are trying to save their physical body, it's doubtful to know whether that could be considered devotional service. There's always exceptions. Huh? The exception, of course, is the battle of Kurukshetra. One of the last battles of that war was the fight between Bhima and Duryodhana. But Bhima, of course, was they were trying to defeat each other. Bhima's fighting could be, of course, and is considered as devotional service. So again, the point is, what's the consciousness behind the activity? It seems to me you're asking this question, that there's something behind this question in your answer. Хорошо? Окей.
He said that according to the modes under which one is situated, the phase is according to phase. But we can see that people are coming to Krishna consciousness from different means. Mostly not from sattva. So is it the mercy of devotees or that are results of some previous activities, previous lives?
Yeah, those who come to devotional service to Krishna consciousness, they're picking up where they left off in their last lives. Temporarily, they may be in a situation which it appears as though they're under the influence of the gunas. But that's circumstantial. And as soon as they actually find Krishna consciousness and become a little, develop just a little understanding, they quickly come back to the platform of their consciousness from where they left off.
И как только они соприкасаются с сознанием Кришны и начинают немного понимать, что означает сознание Кришны, они очень быстро восстанавливают тот уровень сознания, которое они оставили в прошлой жизни.
There's also mercy cases.
Также есть случаи с милостью.
Those who are getting the mercy of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu.
Те, кто получали милость от Господа Чайтанья Махапрабху.
Or the mercy of the devotees, and they're able to take up devotional service by the mercy of Krishna and his devotees. Okay.
So we cannot say it straight.
Impossible. So, why don't we talk about science then? Yesterday you were asking about science, you made the science question. Could you repeat that, please?
Жизнь.
Вопрос все-таки в том, как проповедуют ученые, где ее, которые убеждают, что подтверждение того, что много не важно.
Ну, это мое мнение, да. А вообще сильно они тут. И проповедь, как я им проповедую, потому что я свой метод использую. И там, рабочий представитель. Другими словами, как объяснить ученым, что наука не так важна, как они думают. Ну да.
So two questions. First is how to preach scientists in general. And second, how to explain to the scientists that actually the science is not so important as they think.
Did everybody hear the question?
Yeah.
Say it again. So, how to preach to scientists?
So, what does it mean, science?
What does it mean, science? In this case, I think we're talking about the material science. Biology, physics, chemistry, those kinds of things. So, I have an advanced degree in science. I became a devotee just after getting my degree, my second degree in science. And I considered myself as a budding or neophyte scientist. So I had the opportunity to write to Srila Prabhupada, and I asked him how I could use my scientific credentials in Krishna's service. And I gave the example of some experiments that we could do that could be used to convince the scientists of the to prove to the scientists the truth of Krishna consciousness. I gave a suggestion of some experiments that we could do by which we could prove the truth of Krishna consciousness to scientists. And Prabhupada wrote back a very interesting answer to that. What he said was, our main interest is to preach to the innocent public and not to the scientists. Practically speaking, he was discouraging me from trying to preach to scientists. This was in December of 1973, before the Bhaktivedanta Institute was begun. Prabhupada's point, he said that the scientists, after all, they have free will, and if they choose to remain atheistic, what can we do? He said, our main aim is to convince the innocent public that life comes from life and not from matter.
Наша главная цель — это убедить единую публику в том, что жизнь происходит.
So that was Prabhupada's general approach at that time. Now later he met Bhakti Swarup Damodar, and he started the Bhaktivedanta Institute. And Bhakti Swarup Damodar, Prabhu, his preaching was to scientists. And his disciple Rasaraj, who is also now a prominent member, a leader of the Bhaktivedanta Institute, his interest is also in preaching to scientists. And they have different approaches, and these things become quickly controversial. Bhakti Swarup Damodar Maharaj's approach was to find a synthesis between science and religion. He has the proceedings published from his last conference, in which he has many many big name scientists coming to address the questions of consciousness, for example. So he's not trying to convince them directly that Krishna consciousness is bona fide or scientific. Rather, what he's doing is taking them to use their scientific approach to address the question of consciousness. And while he made a very favorable impression on many scientists, the question is, perhaps one may question how effective it was, because I don't know of any of those people who actually became devotees. Rasaraj's approach is to beat the scientists at their own game. And show them that he is just as good a scientist as they are. And he's addressing questions of quantum mechanics or something like that. But again, the question remains as to what the point of that approach is, because he's also not making devotees per se. So one can preach to scientists perhaps in those two ways. But I don't think that's what you were asking about. I think you were asking about when some scientist comes to your book table and starts talking, how do you preach to a person in that situation? This is very difficult. It's a very difficult thing to do. Because generally the scientists are very puffed up. They think they know everything and everybody else knows nothing. So what can you tell a person who knows everything? Very difficult. You ask him, my dear sir, what do you not know? Best thing to do is you ask them some challenging questions. And if they have some humility, they may be able to admit that they don't know some things. You can say, how did you get in that body? Well, this will confuse them a little bit because they think they are the body. The body is a machine, and at the time of death, everything stops, and that's it. But you can ask them, you can show them some simple example. The scientists say that the body is changing every 7 years. Every atom, every chemical in the body is replaced every 7 years. So this body that you have now is not the same body that you had 7 years ago. But are you the same person? If you feel yourself to be the same person, that means that there's something that's transcending the changes of the body. I don't know all of these arguments right offhand. But you can study, I think you have the Origins magazine in Russian, yeah? Origins magazine. What's the name of it? Okay. So this magazine, it gives very many arguments for this. For example, you can give some evidence about the probability of one protein evolving by chance, evolution. The man who discovered DNA, Joseph Crick, British man, he explains the probability of that event.
Человек, который изучал ДНК, это был британец Джозеф
Крик.
Он описывал, какова вероятность того, что так произойдет само по себе.
One protein. Protein, of course, are made up of different amino acids.
Один протеин, он состоит из разных аминокислот.
How many? 21 amino acids?
Сколько там? 21 аминокислот.
Something like that. And they have to be stacked up in a certain order in order to function properly. Even the smallest protein has something on the order of 1,000 amino acids. So the probability of developing one protein simply by chance is something like 10 raised to the 360 millionth power. 10 to the power of 360 million. One divided by that number. Now, by the science of probability, anything with odds less than 1 to 10 to the 50th power are considered impossible.
Согласно науке вероятности, все, что превышает 1 минус
So in other words, by chance, in all the time that the scientists estimate that this creation has been around, there is not even the slightest possibility that one protein could be created by chance, what to speak of the many thousands of proteins that are in even the smallest cell.
Поэтому за то время, как существует Вселенная, само по себе, даже вот этот один маленький протеин не может возникнуть. Нет никакого шанса, что он возникнет. Что вы говорите, что же вы говорите уже о тысячах разных более сложных протеинов, или даже какой-то самый простой вещи.
In America, in the last 15 or 20 years, there's been very many very interesting books written about the impossibility of evolution. I don't know. It would be nice if some of them have been translated to Russian. You can check and see if you can find this book called Darwin's Black Box. It's written by a man by the name of Michael Behe. Michael Behe.
Behe.
This book has very many amazing arguments against the possibility of chance evolution. And if you simply learn a few of these arguments, you will find you will have very powerful information for challenging scientists. In any case, it's still almost like preaching to Christians. In other words, a waste of time. In other words, it's almost a waste of time. Because they're not likely to admit defeat. What was the second part of the question? Oh, there was two. How to preach to scientists and
how to prove them that the science is not important.
So
можно просто добавить. Я бы начал с того, что, допустим, та же наука, ее можно разделить как материальную индустрию, и потом уже как бы это. Взять человеку понять, что наука рассматривается не просто наука, а если как бы они идут путем материалистической, вот, а есть точно зрение семена культуры. И всякая позиция уже
объясняет. First of all, we could say that it could be two points of view, material and spiritual, on the science. So, material, spiritual. And starting from that, we can start explaining explanations.
He has
some knowledge, but that is material knowledge. But to give him explanation that there is also spiritual.
If they're willing to hear that. Most of them are convinced that there's no such thing as spirit. So, if you find somebody who's willing to listen, you can say something. Another very good source for some challenging information would be Dhrutakarma's books. You can take a few examples from Dhrutakarma's work and very quickly defeat the idea of evolution.
I didn't translate the first. Look at the book of Dhrutakarma.
You can take a few arguments from Dhrutakarma's books and very quickly defeat the idea of evolution. For example, there are skeletons that are found, human, anatomically correct human skeletons that are found in layers of coal that are 600 million years old. You have a few examples like that, and then you can say, so there is no evolution. These, obviously, these people are around for a very long time. Generally, what happens is people reject the evidence that does not fit the picture that they want to have. And even among even scientists are not very scientific in that regard. There's a very significant book for arguments about that written by a fellow named Thomas Kuhn. Called The Structure of Scientific Revolutions. And I know that book is available in Russian. That book is considered a very fundamental book for understanding how science actually happens. So if you want to preach to such people, you have to get yourself prepared. You get some background by reading Thomas Kuhn, reading Dhrutakarma, reading Behi. You read books like that, and then you'll be able to give some very very big challenges. The main thing is that science is restricted in what it allows. Academia restricts what they allow in terms of what they call bona fide science. There's limits placed on the what's considered acceptable debate. And those limits are anything that will bring you to an atheistic conclusion. If your science shows something that does not agree with the established party line, it will not be allowed. For example, you cannot criticize the Big Bang. Even the Big Bang has 33 major flaws in it. If you criticize it, if you try to point out those flaws, you will not get funding, you will lose your position as the in science. If your archaeology shows that there are 600,000 year old human skeletons, you will lose your job also, and you will not get anything printed.
Если так, то показывает, что существует скелет человека, которому 600 миллионов лет, то он также потеряет свою работу, свое положение, и он не будет издаваться, и другие будут издаваться.
If your mathematics or biology shows that evolution is impossible, you will not get printed, and neither will you be able to keep a job. Now, if you study this, you see the same thing going on practically in every field of academic study. Why is that? Because somebody has a particular agenda that they're trying to establish, and they're co-opting science in order to keep their agenda. They're compromising science. So those persons who control that money, of course, those are the same people that control the world. And it's their job to use the people in academia to control the world view. And generally, this is the purpose of education, is to indoctrinate young people in a particular worldview. This is why Prabhupada so heavily criticized modern education. Because they're not interested in teaching people how to think or how to reason. They're simply interested in to indoctrinate them to a particular understanding of life so that they can be controlled. Okay, so I'll stop with that. Maybe there's some questions about these points.
Относительно того, что вы сказали, если человек проповедует научность, он распространяет книги, и подходит ученый, и вы привели несколько примеров, как можно как бы заставить его задуматься. Один из таких примеров, когда, допустим, спросить, какова вероятность протеина возникновения. А если, допустим, подходит ученый, представитель другой конфессии, есть ли какие-то конкретные примеры, которые также позволят заставить его задуматься, чтобы хотя бы время выиграть и перестроиться?
Give us very good examples. What to say to the scientist who is approaching to you are distributing books and you met with scientists? You can say about probability of protein or something like that. And it will allow you to win some time to change your comfort or think what to say next. And maybe you can give some specific recommendations regarding what to say to the representative of other religion groups to make them think about.
Well, the best thing to do in this case is to present questions to them. So is not that they will agree or give an answer at the present time. But for sowing seeds of doubt.
Но суть в том, чтобы посеять семя сомнения.
Later on, that question will stay in their mind. They won't be able to give an answer to it.
И потом этот вопрос будет сидеть в их сознании, и они будут не способны найти на него ответ.
And then they'll start asking, perhaps asking some questions, why?
И возможно потом они начнут задавать вопросы, почему.
So for science. If you understand some of these arguments, you can say, how do you explain this 600,000 year old skeleton, for example? How do you explain evolution when probability theory says it's impossible? You can ask some questions like that. For people of other religions, it's a little more difficult. They are, because they're not operating on the basis of logic or reasoning. They're operating basically, they've convinced themselves that what they believe is correct, and there's nothing else even to think about. For myself, I don't even bother to argue with people of other religions. If they have questions, I will answer them. But that's as far as the book.
In other words, one should take the initiative.
Take the initiative? Well, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying it depends on the attitude of the person that you're speaking to. If they're submissive, and they ask questions in a submissive way, you can speak to them. If they're not, then it's better not to.
Но, да, я понял, но когда он спрашивает, он с определенной целью. И для того, чтобы прежде чем отвечать ему, то есть нужно взять инициативу свою, для того, чтобы понять. А для того, чтобы понять правду, то говорите, нужно задать ему вопрос. И исходя уже с его ответа, то есть самому оценить как, да, стоит ему объяснять или нет.
If we make it a little conclusion, if what do you mean to take initiative in your hands? It means you ask me the question, you see the response, and you understand who is in front of you, so we can make decisions. Should you teach?
Yeah.
Or not?
Correct. Good. Yeah, like
that. Занимаюсь изучением различных материальных
вещей. I want to ask you, under the influence of which beings, the scientists are the material science.
Okay, repeat the question. I don't think everybody heard that.
Вопрос в том, что какие группы между учеными занимаются материальным.
Same ones, Rajaguna and Tamaguna. No different. No, same, Rajaguna and Tamaguna. If you read the symptoms of Rajaguna and Tamaguna, you'll see that that describes almost everybody in current society.
Если вы прочитаете симптомы определенного магума, то вы увидите эти симптомы больного, каждый человек из современного общества.
But the problem scientists have is that they're always taught that they have the truth.
Но проблема совершенно не в том, что они всегда думают, что именно они обладают истиной.
So this is a very very interesting phenomenon.
Это очень интересный феномен.
It's like Americans. They are told, you are free, you are free, you are free.
Это как американцы, которым сказали, вы свободны, вы свободны.
And they are thinking, we are free.
Они думают, мы свободны.
But American society is not free.
Но американское общество не свободно.
They're a very controlled society.
Это очень контролируемое общество.
But they've been brainwashed.
Но у них проблемы мозга.
So scientists are also brainwashed.
И подобным образом ученые также проводят
мозг. We have the truth. We have the truth. We have the truth.
У нас истина. У нас истина.
Nobody else has the truth but us.
А ни у кого другого истины нет.
So they're brainwashed. You can't tell an American that he's not free.
Потому они не проводят мозг. Не можете сказать американцам, что они не свободны.
They're brainwashed to think they are free.
Потому что они уже продуктами мозгами относительно того, что они являются свободными.
And even if you point out to them how they are not free, they cannot see it.
И даже если вы прямо укажете на факты, почему они не свободны, то они не смогут этого увидеть.
This is the nature of brainwashing.
Это такова природа продуктов.
Same thing with scientists.
С учеными то же самое.
You can point out to them how they do not have the truth.
Вы можете им показать прямо то, как они не обладают знанием.
But they won't be able to accept it because they're brainwashed.
Но они просто это не смогут воспринять, потому что они.
Generally, such people must have a big crisis before they can change their way of thinking.
В основном, прежде чем человек может изменить способ своего мышления, он должен пройти через кризис.
The
scientist is just not ready to accept information. If you will say to him that you don't have the tools, you don't understand something, he will be confused. So why should we
No, he won't. He won't be confused.
If
you tell him you don't have proper understanding, he will not think he is confused. He will think you were confused.
And I said abused or upset, not confused.
Okay, say it again.
Abused. The same.
He will think.
He will feel bad.
Oh, abused.
Abused.
Okay. So this is diplomacy.
That is diplomacy.
So this means diplomacy, how to say something so that they can accept it. Generally, I don't think scientists are going to be abused, at least American scientists aren't going to. Instead, they think that you are confused.
В чем превосходство вайшнавизма над американцами?
Why the vaishnavism is superior towards the other religions?
Why vaishnavism is superior to other religions?
What is superior point of vaishnavism?
Vaishnavism is superior because it aims at the absolute truth.
The problem is why Vaishnavism predates other religions. Why? And the answer is that Vaishnavism points to the absolute truth.
It's not a matter of some personal belief.
It doesn't matter just faith in someone.
The big difference is that most people want to bring the truth, they want to make the truth submissive to themselves.
Mm-hmm.
But a Vaishnava is becoming submissive to the truth.
Но Вайшнав он сам подчиняется истине.
So therefore, the Vaishnav can find the truth, whereas the others, trying to make the truth submissive to them, means that they wind up with illusions.
Поэтому Вайшнав он может найти истину, обрести ее. Тогда как тот, кто пытается приспособить истину под свои потребности, он просто останется со своим иллюзией.
Which points out why it is not so easy to become a
Vaishnava.
Not simply by changing clothes, shaving the head and putting on tilak we become Vaishnava. One must come to the point of surrender of their false ego, of their surrendering their illusions to be able to become Vaishnava. And it takes sometimes a very long time for some persons who consider themselves as devotees to be able to do that. It sometimes takes a long time. Not as easy as we might like to think.
You said that Vaishnava is serving to the truth?
Vaishnava is what?
Serving to the truth.
Yeah.
Does the truth serve?
Does the truth
serve?
Serve?
Yes.
What does that mean?
Что это значит?
Ну, вот, я обратно сказал, что Вайшнава, значит, служит истине. Я с этим полностью согласен. Но обратный процесс, он существует, истина служит и влияет на Вайшнава.
I completely agree that Vaishnava is serving to the truth. But is it, is the problem, another process exists? When the truth is serving to the Vaishnava.
Why do you ask this question?
Because of my own point of view, that's why I'm asking such a question.
Yeah, what's that point of view?
There is a feedback loop.
Mm. Okay, I understand your reasoning. In a sense, you can say that. What is the truth? Absolute truth is Sri Krishna. Does Krishna serve his parts and parcels? Yes, he does. If you want to be an illusion, he gives you Mahamaya. And he's serving you in that way. If you want to know the absolute truth, then he takes that Maya away. All right, I think it's late. We should stop. My train does not leave until 10 o'clock tomorrow night. 10:30 tomorrow night. So, if you are interested, I can come again tomorrow.
Maybe morning about 1 hour.
Oh.
You and what?
That's an idea. We'll try. Try.
Good morning.
Okay. Yeah, we'll come for the morning program tomorrow. For Srimad Bhagavatam. Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Yavamya Vajdaneshwara Prabhu ki
jai.